But also, of course, we are learning as a country, which is good that also we are prepared to burn our fingers. The issues of which you raise in terms of your challenge in terms of monitoring and monitoring the performances it may, I'm sure corporate services also will assist on that one. I heard you also acting that you said you are working on that one, but I'm just saying that probably we need just to upscale it so that also what the members think raised in terms of the accuracy of the information we have. But also, Chairperson, one must close by with an appreciation that at least they are honest and accept the way they are, oversight, not mistakes, because they're not so fundamental, it's more of numbers and all that. But also we are mindful as members also that she's just a new actor, so there will be those things, and but she's doing her life as best as it may. Thank you, much appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Killen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just first of all, I want to say that, as in the past, I have indicated that it's a department that is trying to pull up its socks. We usually identify additional weaknesses, but please accept it in that spirit. Secondly, they say the best man for the job is a woman. So in this department, it seems that if men want to be promoted to high positions, they will have to become very, very good. So just to move, first of all, just clarity, Chair, if I may just look at the presentation on the third quarter. There's on page, some of our pages are sort of difficult to see. It's on program one, where there's reference to revamped ward information system, management system. Can I have clarity about that? What is it referred to? Because ward, obviously, in South African context, has a specific meaning, and maybe it was a sort of an overambitious target and process. So can I just have clarity about that and what it intends to do? Secondly, I think I'm actually quite impressed with the percentage of targets met. What is always a challenge for us as committee members is to check if the departments are really very strict with themselves, that they don't give themselves 80% if they've actually only achieved 33%, because that is part of the self-assessment is always difficult to really say we can better, let's be harsh on ourselves, let's improve. But from what the presentations that were made, I think we can actually say that it seems that they really have the dashboard under control. I want to ask if you are comfortable with the number of targets that you're setting yourself up, if you could look at that and say what are the key elements and performances that you should do as a department. Secondly, I'm happy to hear that you are aware of the need for budget cuts and for actually becoming more creative with limited funds coming from the national fiscus. Everybody all over the world is currently just trying to tie themselves in a closer waistband, etc. So I think that is important. And that brings me to the issue, Chairperson. I want to know two things. As far as specifically your bulk buying is concerned, as well as your number of publications, do you really have a tab on not only published, but actually circulated and read? Because if there is a lot of publications that are printed, first of all, the number of publications I'm concerned about, quite a large number, do they really reach the targets, or are they being heaped up in some offices somewhere? In fact, some of them, even in Tusong centers that are not well sort of operational? Secondly, what is directing your media bulk buying? Is it based on audited figures also your radio advertisements? There are AMPS figures, etc. Do you direct your media bulk buying to those publications that clearly have an extensive readership? What percent, if not, what percentage of your media bulk buying goes to other publications that you have no idea how many people are reached? Because that in itself is also wasted expenditure. Whether you then shrink your expenditure, but you still publish and distribute through some of these media that don't reach the target. Okay, so I think I've made my point. Can I have clarity about that? And then lastly, Chair, I see this. I don't know if some of the publications, it's sometimes difficult to know, is it a once-off, is it a special, only a SONA publication, is it, you know, it's difficult to determine how many publications appear how often. But if we're talking about participatory democracy in action, and this is last year's one, I want to know to what extent is the department making sure that the public understands that we have a constitutional democracy and that the avenues that they use, that they can use, not only to song centers, etc., but through their public representatives, to bring matters of public concern to the public representatives, what sort of communication is done to achieve that? The reason is, if we look at what communities are doing with infrastructure, setting infrastructure alight, etc., out of some frustration. Yes, sometimes it's political conflict, we also know that. But sometimes it is really service delivery frustration. What can government communications do to actually try to reach those communities to say, there are different mechanisms that you can use. You don't burn down infrastructure. So what are you doing to that? Because from where we sit, and clearly it's an opposition perspective, but you must remember, government communication serves the government of the day, not a political party that is in government of the day. An election can come, and an election can, and I see some smiles on the opposite side, but things can change overnight. No government is certain that they can return. And you must direct the programs in such a way that you can serve a new incoming government in the same fashion. I mean, hopefully there will then be some other faces as well, not only the government in these publications. But really, I'm very serious about that. I think it is important that people understand they have choices in South Africa. If not, it's really going to place our democracy at risk. Chair, I just wanted to say I echo the sentiments expressed by Honourable Van der Merwe, and that is, it links to what I've just said, and that is the mandate of the department. The mandate, it must be so crisply clear of when you can react and when it is the individual party or one of the partners in the ruling alliance that should preferably respond, not government communications. If you have that, and all of the officers of the department throughout, so that they can distinctly understand the difference. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let me not go there. Honorable Schneeman.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe I should just say something before I get to my questions, but that the job of GCIS, Government Communication Information Services, is to communicate the work of government. And this government will be in power for a long time, so I think the Honourable Killian must come back to reality and not be sitting in cloud nine. She must come back to reality, and that's the job of GCIS, talk about the success of this government, to talk about the work of this government, and we expect GCIS to do that unapologetically. So I thought I should just say that, and we have no problem for GCIS to really go to hit the ground running to communicate what government is doing, what this government has done to change the lives of our people. That's what it's there for, and that's what it needs to do. But I wanted to just raise a couple of points on the presentation. I just wanted to firstly ask for some clarity in terms of the annual performance plan document that we have. On page 28, it talks about, right along, it talks about maintaining a vacancy rate. It talks about maintaining a vacancy rate of 8%. Just like to get some clarity around that as to what that actually means, that we're going to keep posts open. I just like to get some clarity because it's not quite clear the way it's put there. That's the first thing. In terms of the strength plan presentation that you've presented, I wanted just to, one of the things that we often pick up in our oversight visits is this issue of the GCIS stands, which are supposed to be in post offices. And there seems to be some inconsistency as to how these stands are used, whether they're there, whether they're not there, whether they have pamphlets, whether they don't have pamphlets. Now, one of the things that we picked up in the last visits that we did at some of the post offices, that we get told that there isn't information to go in there. Now, what I'd like to know is, I mean, is that as a result of your having now reduced all your publications? And if it is, then I think there needs to be a relook at what are you actually going to use those stands for, because that is a public, it's a public space where the public go, and it's an ideal opportunity for them to pick up information about government. And that's why I think those stands were put in there in the first place. But if they're going to be empty, then it will be like we have seen in some post offices, that they become a book rack for something else other than government information. So I just think something as part of this new financial year that's about to start and continue it, there needs to be a reassessment as to whether you're using that facility effectively and whether it's being maintained as it should be. So that's the one thing. But I've noticed on your slide presentations, I can't see what the slide number is, not printed very well, but Program 2, Communications and Content Management. And you talk about the Vukuzenzele, which, if I understand correctly, it's been one of your more successful publications, and yet you're reducing that. You're reducing the print of that. But if I look at some of the documents that we had outside, these big, thick yearbooks, etc., would it not be better to try and start putting a lot more of that information onto electronic systems? Rather reduce some of those things and distribute them electronically and not reduce the print run of your book in Zenzele, because your print run, your book in Zenzele, I think does have an impact in the communities it goes to. And as I've heard before, it's one of the more successful publications. Because it'd be interesting to know, I mean, we have the yearbook, and in fact you're increasing the yearbook here, but you're reducing the Vukuzenzele. Does that really make sense? How many people actually read the yearbook? Let's ask that, the 45,000 you're giving out. So just a question I'm asking. I just wanted to raise this, the Braille publications. I think there needs to be just a check as to how successfully you are distributing as GCIS the Braille publications, because one of the GCIS offices we went to last year actually had boxes of Braille documents just lying in the passage. They were not distributed. So I think there needs to be an assessment as to where these are going and how they are distributing it. Because it worries me that there are many people in the country that want to use those, but they they're not getting to the right place possibly. And that for me is a concern. So as I've said, I think we really need to be looking at how do you, instead of just, because there's a lot of people that have got email and access to the internet, but particularly email, so how do you distribute some of these documents in email or smaller documents? I think you need to be looking at that. The other thing that I do want to raise is, you know, I'm surprised that GCIF doesn't have an app on for you to download on your cell phones and tablets. There is no app for GCIS, unless I can't find it. And I think if there isn't an app, you know what an app is, you have on your phone, you have an app for Standard Bank, for a bank or something, where you can do your banking. And I would think that having an app for GCIS, where you could tap on that, and you could pick up instantly, you know, news releases and other interesting, other sections of GCIS's work, that would be at your fingertips. So maybe GCIS needs to look at that. If they haven't done so, I'd really want to urge you to look at that, because I think that would help you to really disseminate information far wider as well. And if you look at the number of young people in our country that are using cell phones, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. So I'd really want to urge you, I'd be interested to hear whether you've looked at that. You know, this morning, driving into here to Parliament, I was listening to a spokesperson of a particular minister. And the way in which they put their message across, I thought was rather confusing. Because it actually got the radio presenter zooming in onto something, which I actually realized that this spokesperson didn't actually mean. But the way the person presented it, and presented the angle of what he was saying, if you weren't listening carefully, you would have got the totally wrong picture. And I raised this in line with the training that you're talking about for various government communicators. Interested to know, does it cascade down to spokespersons of ministers as well? Because I think there's a desperate need for many of the communicators we have, spokespersons, to really be trained on how to get their message across. Because, you know, you just have to say one mistake in what you're trying to say, and it brings across a totally different message. So if we can get some clarity on that, and how long are we going to take to implement that? Because I think it's vitally important. And then my last question, Chair, just relates to the outreach programs of GCIS. You list the various outreach programs that you do. And just to find out, are these generally in urban areas? Or are they generally in urban areas? Or are you focusing primarily on rural areas? Because I think it's the rural areas, rural communities in our country, that are losing out in many instances. And when I talk about rural communities, I'm talking about going off the beaten track, going off onto the dirt roads, and going into rural communities in mountainous areas, etc., wouldn't normally get access to that type of information, because that's how I think you should be directing. Next year.
Thank you, Honourable Shin. Shin Mam.
Thank you, Chairperson. So I'm going to be going a bit all over the place. And the Honourable Shin Mam talked about the Booker's and Zeller reduction in the print order. My concern basically is about the difference in the figures. The presentation says 40 million were printed, and this has now been reduced to 20.4 million. If I look at the budget vote that comes from the estimates of expenditure, in the previous years you've never printed 40 million. Last year, I mean, it's 2009 to 2010, there was 10 million. 10 to 11, there were 10 million. 11, 12, there were 18.5 million. And now we're down to 20.4 million and will be for the next couple of years. So where does the 40 million come from? If you can just have some consistency there, I'd appreciate that. I also want to go back specifically to the issue that my colleague Butch Stain rose about on page 12 of this document of the third quarter,
about the digital system, where it says quite clearly the service provider was unable to get the system working. Now, either there was a problem with the procurement, that there wasn't a thorough analysis of the needs done beforehand, for this A to have bought a system that you didn't actually realize all the steps involved in it. And that is then coupled with the other system, which is the information management system, where the scope for the revamp is much wider than anticipated. Now, you know, who does your IT? Are you not having proper advice, properly skilled people who can actually run you through what you actually need, all the steps needed in a process, and then thoroughly evaluate the kind of equipment you need and the costs and implementation processes? Because, you know, most, well, an awful lot of IT systems fail because they've been inadequately, there's been inadequate systems evaluation up front. And a lot of it comes from misunderstanding by the people who are going to use it as to what they actually want to use it for and how and the sort of outcomes they want. So, first of all, I want to know whether there's going to be any financial penalties. What were the, as part of the purchase agreement, what penalties were they put into that agreement for non-delivery or late implementation of the system, if there were any in place, and if so, are they going to be implemented? And also, if not, if there is going to be any kind of review of the caliber of the staff in the IT department or whoever, if it was CETA or someone else who actually evaluated, whether you're actually going to make any sort of claims for compensation on both of those projects. Then just a couple of silly things that I've picked up from the estimates of expenditure. I would just like to understand the talk here about inventory, medicines. Now, according to the estimates of expenditure, your average growth rate in the inventory of medicines has gone up by 91.3%, yet you're spending nothing. So I don't know where this mistake comes in, why it's here, because, you know, and then further along, in one of the others, I think you were spending about 1,000 rand on medicine, and that was also an increase of 52%. So did you buy two boxes of aspirin that year, or what? You know, it's just a silly little thing, but it just didn't make sense to me. Then on, this is, as I say, the estimates of expenditure on the sub-programs of GCIS. We talk about the Tucson centres here. And in 2013-14, the centres will be marketed and communications campaigns will be executed through community media and outreach programs such as town hall meetings. I'm just sort of wondering to understand if that is the right way to market the Tucson centres. Obviously, we need to there's a lot of questions being asked here today about the Tucson centres. And, you know, we definitely didn't find any that were really working when we did our oversight trips. What is the purpose of a town hall meeting to expose people to the Tucson centres? Surely there are other ways, you know, even perhaps advertising in Vukuzela, for example, or the community media about this. I don't understand why you need to have call a town hall meeting to explain what that is. Then we also have here sub-programs. We talk about the Media Development and Diversity Agency. This sub-program has no staff. Then in the accounts, we actually get an amount for staff salaries. So are these ghost staff? Do they exist? Are they being paid twice? It's just a silly thing I would like to explain there. Then other things that I'm concerned about, and I know that I said this last year, was that I felt that GCIS was single-handedly keeping the country's printing industry alive. And this, you know, it's actually good to see that budget constraints are perhaps forcing a bit of rationality in the print orders of the publications. But what I would like to know is any independent valuation made of whether all these publications are necessary, are being effective in whatever markets you're sending them to. Because, you know, we're pushing out an awful lot of paper here. And, you know, my colleagues see them dumped in post offices and wherever. You know, are we actually just printing for printing's sake and to have it look like we're doing our jobs? Are they actually being effective? Are they actually reaching their markets? What kind of independent, and I'm not talking about going around yourselves, I'm talking about outside independent analysis. And that also then brings me on to the advertising budget that you're doing, and one sees an awful lot of benefit in having, in many ways, a government bulk buying process. There are pros and cons for it, but basically, the current year you spent 27.3 million on advertising. And then, last year it was 13.3, this year it's 27.3 million in advertising. And you, I didn't necessarily get that there was a vast increase in the number of departments that are using this advertising service. Perhaps we could have some progress there on the numbers of which departments are using you and which aren't. But again, here I want to know, what independent analysis is being made to justify the effective use of that money? Is the advertising being effective? Because we know that you spend an awful lot of money advertising in publications that don't have an ABC accreditation. And so, is this money wasteful expenditure? Is it actually reaching its mark? Because to actually come out and say, we've spent 50 million on advertising, isn't a mark of success. It's a mark of free spending. And without having an independent analysis of the amount of money you're spending on advertising, you know, we have no way of knowing whether the taxpayer is getting value for money. And just to go back to the Tucson centers, my feeling from the oversight trips that we did was that there was resistance on the ground at local level from the various government departments. That this whole idea of Tucson centers was being forced on them from somewhere above, and they weren't really committed to it. And we had this when they objected to having to share the rent and the phone and the electricity bills for centers where they didn't want to be. And I sort of wondered if there wasn't some resistance to it being imposed on them from on high, and whether it wasn't worthwhile reconsidering submitting to Cabinet the idea that the Tucson centres should become a local or provincial responsibility, and then have ownership with the provinces or with the local municipalities, because that basically, if they are then owned and managed by the people in their hometowns, they might actually be more effective than having to be managed by someone from Pretoria. And they would also therefore be more responsive to their communities, whether that wasn't worthwhile implementing. Yeah, I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Abastan, the CEO for offering us the Braille and the audio facilities for the documentation. This is still a big problem. You can smell the stigma. So when it is offered, we really appreciate. Personally, I use audio. The second thing, just when you now and then use audio, that didn't capture, I didn't understand the context in which you're using it. Maybe you can just quickly when you answer. Because I know Hollywood movie industry is about what you used to call in the past Bioscope. They produce that. There's a big industry about cinema, films. Now, when you keep on saying Hollywood, I missed. I couldn't just understand the actual context. The third thing, colleague Keenan, I also feel, indeed, this thing of saying GCIS must prepare for a change of government. That's too far-fetched. It's way out. Because really there's no way you are told, filling up old robes with baby clothes and baby shampoos, but scientists telling you, doctors, gynae specialists are telling you, ultimately this is going to be a stillborn. So I also really feel it's way, way out. It will be a waste of resources. But to prepare means they must put an objective budget for that objective, spend money on it. That's what preparation means. So I really think, especially when we are pressed for time like today, it really becomes a waste of time to say such things. The one thing that links with what I've just said now, the one thing, when you said, I just feel, you know, most of the people who are reporting on the objective scorecard, they are getting over 80%. See, I just wanted to comment because really, why do you think objective scorecard performance, you're getting high marks? But in reality, we don't feel that impact. We as members of the community or even people who must keep an oversight with you, is it? Maybe that you're not strategizing, putting your objective, maybe you must review that so that ultimately you must feel the impact. Because if a student is getting distinctions and you say, look, you got distinctions for your qualification, now you are a doctor, cure me, and you can't feel the disease going out, then you get surprised. Why did you get distinctions? So I'm just saying maybe that is something you need to think thoroughly about. Because indeed, all that you got, maybe this is because the private media is overriding you, because you just hear about corruption. That's a good service that government is doing. We really don't feel much about. There's one stage when you said GCIS is not about service delivery, it is partially about service delivery. I thought we all here as a government for service delivery, just to serve society and nothing else. So this is why I'm saying maybe you should rethink, because I thought you are here to communicate what services we render into the community. The last point, Chair, just when we talk about two source services, you said your duty is not to maintain this these Tuso centers and communities. Your duty there is to market them. Now, I think it's very important that you realize the marketing is part of maintenance there. Because if they are not properly marketed, they can't sustain themselves. And it's not easy to receive money for government for sustenance. For example, a lot of them were saying, where there's a community radio, local government is not cooperating with them. The mayor is now and then invited to come and talk about services in the radio, community radio that is based in a Tuso center, and is not coming. And as a result, they can't market, they can't get adverts, even adverts from government and so on. So I just want you to realize that marketing might be a determining factor for the survival of Tuso centers, because if they are not budgeted and government, corporate government is not effective, then they die a natural death, because they can't live on handouts forever. They need to be sustainable. Thanks, I would like you to comment about that.
Thank you. I am still born and so on. Honorable Mrutu.
I think really, if I am going to be asking questions, it would affect our time. But I just want to allude to some of the things here. You know, having known the department, GCIS, where they come from, all the things that we are saying, I think I should say to the acting CEO, we are getting there. You see,
see the issue of marketing, it's a very important thing. Because I know for one thing, our people down there don't know who is supposed to inform them about what is happening in departments. And this is a very important, and you should be strategic. We have been from multi-purpose centers, and now we are talking about Tucson, and we are going ahead. I think everything that has been said by my colleagues, I really respect, and I think are important. But I want to say, Chatterson, you see, the issue of print media, you can do it as much as you can. Now we're hearing they're dumped somewhere and all this. But the one-on-one thing is very important. Most of our areas, our people in the rural areas cannot read. People in the, you know, let me say, not even in the rural, in the townships, you know, the percentage of people who can't read, they don't even know the Incwadi yokwenzantoni, you see. Now, it is important, I think it was quite important for you people to convene a meeting in a town hall. For me, it's very important. And I think that's what we should be doing, Chairperson. That's why I said I don't want to talk about all everything that else. I just want to say, I was looking at the slide 19 when the presentation was made. Yes, they used the social media platforms. And is it difficult for UGCIS to be utilizing us as public representatives in our PCO? That's all I want to say. Because I think it's very important. Thank you.
Thank you. Drachen? Thanks very much. That will conclude the hands I had. Anyone I left? No, no one. Acting CEO, as you respond, we received the quarterly reports of your expenditure. You are the worst performing. In the third quarter, you are at 58% or so. That is worse. At the third quarter, your expenditure is at 58%. That's the expenditure from Treasury, which we receive as committees every quarter. Now, what exactly happened? We are remaining with one quarter at 58, far below. What exactly happened in terms of your expenditure exactly? And why we have spent so less? We are taking over from DOC now, I suppose, in terms of not spending. And how would that justify us approving your DCA budget? Based on the experience of your third quarter expenditure, why must we approve your budget anyway as a committee? Because anyway, you don't seem to spend. That's one issue, because your administration is indicating at 45%, communication and content management 64%, government and stakeholders 72%, at least it's supposed to be 75%. Everything should be at 75% by now, not where it is and so on. Then your last one, communication service agent, is 66%. You are here presenting your budget, we must deal and approve your budget under this condition. Probably we need a thorough explanation why you could not spend your budget and what are you going to do. If you want us to approve your budget, what are you going to do for 2013, 2014 for us to believe that you are going to be able to spend your budget? Otherwise, there is no point that we must approve your budget if you can't spend. So I think for me that's a critical question you must respond so that we understand the reason and what we are going to do so that it becomes easy for us to know that you'll be spending moving forward as one issue. I will hope the other issues members have covered them. I won't ask much, but this is the one which I must ask, because that's the reason we are getting quarterly expenditure from departments. so that as committees, as we deal with your budget, we relate to your ability to spend. And the other issue is that I won't ask the detailed question. What is your take in terms of your current structure of GCIS? Is this structure which we are having currently as government helping us or helping government to communicate? Thorough, seamless communication. If no, what is it which needs to be done? Because I was looking at your strategic plan, I'm not sure whether you're elaborating in terms of how must we move forward to improve it. Because you see, a dead horse is a dead horse. It doesn't matter what you do. If it's dead, it's just dead. If you've got a structural problem of GCIS, it doesn't matter what you do, you'll do your best, but it won't help. If we need to overhaul the structure of government communication, but that's the question I want to understand. What is your view? Is the current structure, if the minister was here, I was going to ask, unfortunately not here, you are here. You have to respond. Is the current structure of GCIS a right structure for government to communicate seamlessly throughout across the three spheres? And if not, what are the measures which we are putting in place to make sure that we move towards that direction? We have been hearing this thing that departments are on their own. You talk to departments when and if they want to. You see, you cannot be entrusted with the responsibility to communicate, but you've got people somewhere. When and if they want to, they will respond. Sometimes they don't respond, what become the consequences of that? Because it impacts in terms of your performance. SGIS and so on. And what are you planning to do about these issues? Because that's why I'm saying if it's structural, probably should be presenting to us how are you curing that defect, the structural defect, and what do you plan to do moving forward and so on, so that we've got the seamless communication throughout government and so on. I'm sure that was the question from the minister, but it's not here. Or they are board not here, you are here. So you fill in the boots because that hits to the policy. The policy matter, I'm raising it because, but I know it's a policy matter which need to be resolved and be start to be looked into so that we've got a good structure. Those are my just smaller than three questions. I don't have more questions. Members, anything before I hand over to the CEO? Nothing. Killen?
Just in
there is no second bite after this.
No. Just to supplement what you've asked about over and under expenditure, the only, you spoke about the structure, Jay, because the over expenditure was on personnel, and I know there was an explanation, but perhaps seeing what the chair has asked you, can you just explain over expenditure on personnel? Because in the other sectors, as you've indicated, there was an under expenditure. I must say, Chair, I did not calculate it to be 58%, but I'm trying to do the calculation. But if you can perhaps just explain, because it seems to be at odds that there's an over expenditure on personnel and there's an under expenditure on some of the other key areas that you are supposed to perform on. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting CEO. We are all yours until lunch.
Thanks, Chair. I think my team is...
We are not on top. We are all yours. There is no top down.
Nice in the south. I'm not going to deal with all the questions. I think my colleagues will assist. But I just wanted to remark on a few broad issues. If I'm not going to follow the sequence, but I thought the one that seems to have been cutting across was around the Chusong Center and you the expenditures. And I just wanted to talk to the Chusong Centers, and I'm hoping that the members will assist us because we're just as anxious because we think that this is one very useful initiative of government of taking services to the public. And over the years, I think GCIS has been caretaking it. But I think over time we have realized that I think it does need to be given some seriousness. And I will just take you through some of the complexities of the two song centers. Firstly, I think this infrastructure itself resides somewhere else. The services from individual departments report somewhere else. Now, you then have a situation where if Home Affairs doesn't come and open, there's no accountability. And you go to the DG concerned, as he will then tell you that I'm not given funding for making sure that I hire people and I open because I have my mobile. I don't have a budget to maintain that infrastructure. You have a treasury that says we will not give GCIS the funding because the municipalities must maintain them. You go to the municipalities will say, no, it's not our problem because the treasury didn't want to give us the funding. So the crux of the problem resides in resourcing this. And our take has always been to treasury because we feel passionate about the two song centers to say, even if you give us the funding, we will then oversee and make sure that the functions, these centers function. There seems to be no resolution around resourcing these centers correctly. And the third trend that we are beginning to see is that some of them are falling apart. And we would even agree with the members when they say some of the ones that you visited in your constituencies are falling apart. We agree ourselves that they are falling apart. And I mean, I know there's one I visited in somewhere in Limpopo. There was no lights, it was just falling apart. So I think we are at a stage when I took over as an acting, I think in August or so, we started engaging all the relevant departments. We are now at an advanced stage of preparing a memo to cabinet to say there has to be some kind of a serious consideration what do they want to do with the centers, because the threads that goes through all the consultations we've met the DG of Rural Development, DPSA, COGTA, ourselves, all of them are complaining about the funding. So we are preparing a memo, Chairperson. I don't know whether it would be a source of comfort where we are taking it to cabinet to say, firstly, let them resolve the accountability of this, and secondly, let them resolve the issue of the funding of the two song center. And importantly, we are also emphasizing that it is an important initiative. It shouldn't be left to fall apart. So that's my issue around the two song center. The current structure, Chairperson, I think you correct to say it's a policy issue. It's not an easy one for us to resolve from here, because I think one of the reasons that we're getting bashed all the time is because of the model of the current GCIS in itself. When it was conceptualized was that the departments will do the communication because they are closer to the information. But over the years, there's been a lot of frustration, and then it gets migrated to GCIS. We were seen at the time when they conceptualized it is that we're just going to be an overall structure that just gives direction and leadership. But that leadership didn't come with powers to enforce the recommendations that we may put. So it is a debate, Chairperson, that actually needs to be resolved, because currently we're doing the best we can with the existing format, but we don't have the powers of enforcing ourselves in department. We can only advise departments, and what we have seen over the years is that we have found that GCIS more and more is being tasked to do things that were originally conceptualized that they will happen in other departments, and that is why you are finding that it is putting so much strain in our budget, because when they had set up the baseline of GCIS, they never had in mind us doing the campaigns, doing the communication. They saw us as, and it's a war that we are also not winning with treasury to say, you know what, we are now expected to lead, but you've never given us the funding. So we're operating with the little that we have. And I think it's a debate that I would really want somebody else to resolve. We cannot resolve it ourselves. And if I am to quickly go to, there was a question that was raised around the retention strategy of GCIS. There's two views in GCIS, because I think we have a retention strategy, but the view that we take, Chairperson, is that we try and retain staff as much as we possibly can. But I think for us, the emphasis is the retention, the succession, because you can't keep the people indefinitely, because they've all have got their own various career plans. A person may say, 2 years from now, I want to go somewhere else. No matter how much you give that person the money, if the husband says, we are going this way, or no, I have decided that I want to work for SABC, you can't. So I think our emphasis is always on... So what we try and do is to balance that you need to have a succession plan. When that person comes in, you need to work from the premise that she has to transfer the skills. That's why you are even seeing that we are so emphatic about knowledge management, because we say if Nebu leaves tomorrow, let's not be found wanting. So I think we try and balance it in that way, member. I don't know whether the response is satisfactory. I think I must request some of my colleagues to assist me. I think if ever I'm to talk about WIMS, the mandate, I think I have spoken about it, that the mandate is to communicate the government message. Maybe if I can zoom in on the questions that you were making an example with Hank Pistorius. We were not responding because it is an ANC. We were responding to a political problematic issue for government, that as government we're saying a crime knows no color. You can't then say we are allowing a particular race to actually fall apart because they are not being protected by the South African police. And that's what we were trying to correct to me from Mr. Pistorius, that crime knows no color. And that's it had nothing to do with the ANC. Even if it was issued by an ANC member, if that statement, that was Mr. Pistorius was an ANC member and he issued a statement like that, we would have communicated as government that you cannot in this day and age of our democratic country that you still see issues in terms of race. So I think that's basically what we were trying, I think my colleague was trying to illustrate. I think we're very clear of our mandate and we try as much as we can to communicate the work of government, not of a political party. Thanks.
The relationship with the SABC, are we using the SABC? We are working with the SABC.
Why everyone seems to be in love with SABC?
Especially the chair. Yeah. Just to say we work. I mean, for instance, when we do have programs, we do have projects, we engage with the SABC because we are seeing them as one of the platforms and the major platform as a public broadcaster to help communicate government's work. Just as an example, last year when we were preparing for the State of the Nation address now, we have a well-oiled working relationship with the SABC to make sure that everything that we are doing, the whole State of the Nation address, is clearly communicated and broadcast and marketed across the country. We work with the SABC for the, as an example, the COP17. We even had a special workshop where we workshopped them about what COP17 was about, what does it entails to do, and all those things. We do that. We have just had the State of the Nation address now. I indicated earlier on that we are having a workshop next week with the communicators to unpack what does it mean communications-wise for us to take the State of the Nation address forward. In our action plan is actually engaging with the SABC to make sure that we spread the word and love. So we have scheduled a relationship and relationships with the SABC. We are seeing them as a major stakeholder in popularizing the government's work. The issues of the outreaches and the like, much as we understand and we appreciate the fact that outreaches is for all members of the community, we do prioritize the rural areas. I mean, the Deputy President wore on poverty. that mostly it does the outreaches in the rural areas. The president, Siasola, I mean, last year he went to rural Free State. It's largely about the rural areas. I was fortunate to accompany Deputy Minister Bapela last year. We went to Vembe, deep Venda area, to actually engage with the people. So we don't necessarily go to the nice places and the like. We actually even go down there. But even the ministers, and we encourage ministers, and ministers anyway, they do know and understand where the poverty is and where the need is, and they'll go there. But we have also had serious problems to say that, you know, sometimes you forget that even your higher LSMs people need to be engaged. And that's why we actually started saying, you know what, there is a sector that has been forgotten, and it's not fair and it's not right for us to do that. And we started doing these town hall meetings. And the nice thing that we're also doing with these post-SONA briefings, we build a basket of services. We do a walkabout. We encourage ministers to do the community radio station. We encourage them to meet with the public, but we also encourage them to do the higher LSM. So it comes as a package. That's what we've been doing. Even the publication talks about all those things. Yeah. And then the other thing, that the public participatory public democracy is one program and project that we are working on. Members, I think it's important to know that the whole of participatory democracy is a program that is being driven by Department of Justice. But we realize that it is going to be critical and important for us to work with them. We have already started something. Last year, after Marikana and all the other labor unrest and the like, we actually developed some leaflets on the do's and don'ts when people protest. Just explain to them what is a protector's strike, what does it mean, what can you do, and the like. Even in the Free State, we actually had some leaflets about, you know, vandalizing property is criminal. We can't allow these things. These are the things that you need to do. You have a platform, you can voice your issues, but you don't have to destroy, you don't have to kill, you don't have to. So these are some of the things that we are doing, but there's a program that we actually want to formalize. Engaging with the public sector, in my presentation, I didn't zoom fully into that one, is that much as we are engaging with the public, but we've realized and we know that the public sector is another important stakeholder. And we have something called the Internal Communicators Forum. When there are programs, when there are projects, when there are issues, even with the State of the Nation Address, we share those with the internal communicators, because the forum is each and every department, even at provinces and municipalities, they have the forum that they have a unit that engages their department staff. So as GCIS, when there are messages, when there is content, we send it to those departments for them to share their information with the public servants. I mean, next week is going to be Water Week, as an example. We have developed we call it an email banner to share it with the departments, so the departments need to know and we want to conscientize their staff around all those issues. These are some of the things that I have to spoon up.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks very much. With regard to the issue of vacancy rate maintaining 8%, I think government, DPSA, through DPSA, is saying at least government departments should have a 10% vacancy rate, which means at any given time, a department must be 90% full with capacity. So what we are saying is we are going to maintain 8%, which means we will always be at 90%. That is the minimum. But that is why you see the baseline was 10%. And for the past 3 years, we have been on average 96%, 98% per capacity. So we are saying we reduce it by 2% so that at least the acceptable one will be 92%. was referring to the acting issue that was being mentioned all along at senior management level. Like the CEO has indicated, we've got a very effective retention strategy. But why at senior management now you see many of us being, or some of us being on acting positions, is because of the the end of the contract by the CEO. Now, when the PCO Corporate Services became acting, the Chief Director of Human Resources had to get into the position of the PCO Corporate Services. And then the one that really is a
consequential
the one that is really because of resignation, which was voluntary, was the DCO Content Management, which is Mr. Mona. And the way our turnaround time is that we fill the post within 2 months. And like the CEO has indicated, he left the end of January. And in March, the next week, the 20th, we have done everything. The minister will be doing the interviews, and then very soon we'll be filling the post. And then with regards to WIMS, I think the question was whether we did the correct scope. Number one, I must emphasize that it is not done by an external service provider. It is done internally, and it is our ward information management system. What we do is we develop it internally. What we do is with the provincial offices that we are having, all their projects, their communication interventions are captured in this system, which was in our IT system, which we developed internally. The purpose is that at a press of a button, they must give us a dashboard report to say for the whole 3 months or whatever, this is what we've been doing so that we can update our reports. So we realized that there is the system itself has some defects. We wanted to revamp it. And the reason why really we delayed with the target is because seeing that it is done internally, we don't have the adequate number of staff in the IT unit who will be paying attention to that. So that is why we delay. But there's no financial loss. There is nothing because we do it internally. We develop it in the organization itself. I think that's all that I needed to.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were quite a few comments and questions in my area, and I too am speaking as a consequential functionary. But I think and I will be a little random because there were so many thoughts, and I've tried to group some of the things. I think when it comes to distribution, this is something that we are attending to at the moment because we know and believe that this is an area where we can improve. So we're strengthening the marketing function, which up to now has also been a relatively under-resourced center in the business, to ensure that we get away from, and quite definitively, that we get away from the issue that the members raise from time to time about boxes full of materials found in various places. We're not obsessing about the fact that may not be the overwhelming experience, but even where there are these exceptions, we will attend to them very seriously. So I think that's just a commitment that in the distribution area, and I think that includes the relationship with the post office. We will look into that. But I must also just say that from what we know about market research for ourselves, there is still a great preference for knock and drop delivery. A lot of people aren't mobile, especially the elderly, etc. So there is still great demand for having it delivered at home. But I think that our main interest in this is to ensure that the distribution strategy is as balanced as our content portfolio, so that we ensure that as we deliver niche products, that we have equally niche distribution to go with that. And when I speak about niche, I think we are very strong on segmentation and in understanding exactly what people's information needs are. It's quite interesting when you look at the living standards measures segmentation. When someone, you will see people graduate to different points in their life, and therefore their information needs change as well. So in one phase, someone will say, how do I get a house? Meaning a basic RDP house, how do I get that? What are the access points? What are the procedures, etc.? As soon as that person's in the house, you see a priority like, how do I keep this house safe? So you have to understand how someone moves through their whole life and how they experience the change in the country and then meet those information needs, which means that it's a very dynamic and challenging environment, but one where I think the products we do have in place do play quite an important role. I think we take the point about the growth in titles. And the balance we're striking there is, on the one hand, responding to what the market is telling us, what people need to fill the information needs. And at some stage, we need to stabilize, because ongoing innovation is also known as chaos. And we understand that. But we want to ensure that we serve the needs, we get into the market with things that people demand of us, and then to stabilize the operations around that. With regard to Vukas and Zeli and the 40 million number, I think I should just make that clear. The 40 million was our projection for the years ahead into what the number should be, based on what people tell us about Vukas and Zeli at the moment. For our flagship product, we tap into the South African Advertising Research Foundation and other bodies of market-related research that we know that we are doing things not the way we think they should be done, but in ways that the market demands those things. And so Vukas and Zeli is one of those things where people will tell us that your reach is very low because you're getting out to a small percentage of the population. And at the same time, there's a demand with that, because those who know about the product and do pick it up occasionally know how good it is and therefore demand more. And then we have to balance that growth in demand with the need to digitize more. So we're looking into the whole question of going digital to increase the reach, because we have to tap into what we know people's communication habits are, and the fact that people have more mobile devices than there are people in the country. And we want to tap into that. We're also tapping through that, of course, we're tapping into one of the other achievements of government, which is improvements in literacy levels and education. And so we, as part of that developing society, we constantly have to adapt our communication solutions. With regard to the yearbook versus Vukas and Zeli, obviously the yearbook is a reference work, it's a research tool. So even though the number is relatively small, it's in fixed public places, mostly libraries, and obviously multiple users access that. But at the same time, all of these products are available on our website at the moment. Chair, I think I'm going to leave it there for now. I'm not sure that there have been any other major oversights. I think just to say that with Braille, again, as part of the distribution strategy, we will look into that, but we are guided by that, in that, by our provincial officers who liaise with organizations in the sector, but obviously we have the responsibility to ensure that there is no undue dumping, no dumping at all, and so that the products reach people in line with the demand that's provided to us by the sector. Thank you.
Andrew, before acting CEO comes in, we might want to push the time, but people will collapse. They have to eat. It's gonna pass one now. Probably have to break. Otherwise, we'll finish when people have already collapsed because they're hungry. They've not eaten. Probably let's break for lunch. I'm not sure, members. I'm told that there is a finger lunch arranged. I'm not sure what time do you want your lunch to be. But we can come back at 2 and have the 45 minutes. Is that acceptable? Acting as CEO, we are breaking. We'll proceed at 2.
Chair, I just want to raise this. I mean, I think it'd be helpful if we could get an indication as to what time we actually get to finish today. Because you may find some of us are going to start slipping out for flights. And I think 45 minutes may be a bit too long. Can we not make it a bit shorter? Because we still have to deal with MDDA. That would really be my request, even if we had to take a 15, 20 minute break and come back, or 10 minute break or something, but I'm just worried about time.
The time scheduled to finish at 4. The break is entirely up to members. If you want to shorten it, I don't have a problem. So we should be back at quarter to 2. We'll be back quarter to 2.